Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Excuse me. No, take try that. Take two. Take
from
two.
The top again.
Oh, hey there, children of the night, and welcome back to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says all everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark. My friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob. Yes, back. Another thrilling episode. Let's kick off the new year.
Kick off the new season. Season 6 of Bob.
Season 16 of Bob.
No, just six. Don't add 10 years to me, please. Season six.
This is the official season.
This is season 6. I don't know if I ever counted these before, but we're in season 6.
And
that's
then
what
we
I'm
got sweeps week in a few weeks, right? Sweeps week?
Sweeps week?
Where we have to pull out all the stops. We got to get the biggest celebrities out there to stop by Bob After Dark.
We're trying to get one.
Oh, yeah.
The white whale.
You put that into the universe.
I did. I'm manifesting that as hard as manifesting can possibly be, man.
Wow.
So, first episode of 2025.
Yeah.
In case you're listening in podcast land still and you haven't given up on us yet, it just so happened that the holidays fell on Tuesdays this year.
How about that?
Christmas. Count refused to come in despite me being like, man, we should do the show. Count's like, no, I ain't coming out.
I told my family I have to leave them to go see Bob.
It's
studio,
fine. Yeah. I understand.
Christmas Eve.
I understood. And then you had pierogi business to do the following week on
New Year's Eve.
And that's fine as well. It's very weird that we took a vacation.
Don't act like you weren't out on New Year's Eve.
I wasn't.
You weren't?
No, I stayed home and took care of my mom. She had surgery.
Did you guys ring in the New Year? Did you stay up to midnight, though?
I made it till midnight. She certainly did not.
Yeah, that's tough.
You know, she didn't. I made it to midnight.
Midnight's hard as we get older. Is it midnight harder to get to?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. It was a thing. So made it to midnight and we made it to a new year. Normally we do your weekend updates, but I haven't seen you in 2 weeks.
Been a couple weeks, yeah.
So just general vibe, your holiday was good?
Good holiday. The veil was
holidays,
thin,
yeah.
And now it's back to being a thick veil once again. But yeah, good holidays, Bob, there. And man, oh man, 2025. January always has this weird feel, right? Like it seems like it's fresh, doesn't
cold.
It?
It's cold.
It's cold, too.
It's cold, yes.
You know, we're in the studio here. We still have if I could pan the camera.
You're going to mess up the shot.
We still have our
We still have a Christmas tree up.
The WJLB Jet TV Christmas tree, which they did a great job on.
It wasn't here before, so.
Well, I mean, it's been here for the season.
Yeah, not my season, though.
It was here last time you were
was
here.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Can you give me back the
they
camera?
They put it up early.
The show's not Christmas tree.
But here's the thing, Bob.
Uh-huh.
Now here's where the debate comes in as I pan back to the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
When does it come down? I mean,
the rule of thumb has always been keep it up through Dad's birthday, which is the Catholicism.
We had three kings.
That would have been yesterday,
yeah,
right?
So
Dad's
a lot
birthday.
Of people do keep it up.
Yeah, that would have been rule of thumb. Now I start thinking about taking down the Christmas tree. Now
just leave it up
all year round.
You can do all the holidays.
Vix is laughing at me, but for a whole other reason. Yeah. Anyway, Count, so it's our first episode back. Usually, let me tell you how the show usually works.
How does it work?
So we're usually a weekly show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories. And Count Panic, of course, we usually get a quick opinion from you. And I have an opinion for you from my mother who wants to know this.
Oh.
You have three options.
Okay.
You can either be locked in a museum after dark,
okay,
locked in a mall after dark, or okay, locked in a carnival after dark.
Okay,
one's the least scariest?
I'm gonna eliminate carnival.
You don't want to be left alone in the carnival.
No, and then the mall, between mall and a museum.
Yeah,
museum could be creepy too.
My pick would have been museum, only because
Ben Stiller.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm looking for. You know,
so you're trying to be stimulated by.
The hell is a circus going to do for me?
And a mall is just plain.
Look, man, I worked in a mall at one point in my life. There is nothing creepy about a mall.
But the mall after dark, if you're trapped there.
Hours, like one of the last two people in the mall, and it never bothered me.
You go through the food court.
It's like a liminal space thing. But
you know, you could have fun in a mall, I feel like. I don't know. But a museum might, you know what? The museum might definitely eliminate the carnival. I'll stick with the mall, though.
The museum is the spookiest. There's so many objects in there, especially if it's a history museum, you know?
That's a good question.
But
that's a great point, too. What museum are we talking about?
Science and industry. We'll just say Field Museum, sure, because there's mummies.
Oh, well, those are definitely coming alive.
Those are coming alive after dark and coming to get me. But anyway.
Good question, Mom.
So we usually split the show up into two parts. The first part of the show is the weird spooky news of the week. We're not doing that this week. We're kicking off the new year with a guest.
To heck with the news.
To heck with the news. And then we usually have lore of the week ripped right from the diaries of Dr. Ben Vanderson. Well, you don't even have lore of the week this week.
Can people still call in?
People could call in at any point, 219-845-1100.
You remember the number.
That is drilled into my skull.
It's been a few weeks.
Yeah,
I thought you might forget
219-845-1100.
Yeah.
And you can call in at any point. But to kick off 2025, everybody, we have a guest.
Yeah.
Would you like to introduce our guest?
Well, you know, I got it queued up right here. Let me see if I get my I'm working on my announcement.
Yeah, let's hear your best.
Was
his name Rich, the original Price is Right guy? Worked with Bob Barker.
Rick or Rich, right?
Was it Rich? I think it was Rich.
Yeah. We'll figure this out. All right, everybody. Joining us on Zoom,
all the way from the foreign land of Illinois. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. You go.
Well, that's a good. We have Sylvia Schultz joining us on Zoom. She's a paranormal author, researcher, and investigator. Bob, I'll let you go deeper into that. But Sylvia, joining us here on Zoom. Let's see if I could bring her in here on the old technology database. Sylvia, are you there?
Technology.
I'm here.
There we go.
Hey, technology didn't fail us this week, Cal.
No, we get it done sometimes. You know, I was asking before the show, Bob.
Yes.
It's been a while since I've been on Zoom. Full screen on Zoom is always. And by the way, I just noticed there's a banana in the shot. This is not my banana.
I thought you brought that for some quick potassium.
Hello, it's a banana.
It's a banana phone.
I know, right? Well, I'm going to put the bananas here, probably for the morning host. But. That's not my banana, by the
way. No, I thought you brought in a banana. Anyway, I'm like, maybe new year, new you.
New banana.
You know, so not often, actually often. More, I would like to have more guests on Bob After Dark. We were kicking off this year with a very special guest who I've met years ago because I had her calendar hanging on my wall, but now we're Facebook friends, so that's kind of funny how the universe works. We have paranormal and true crime author, researcher, paranormal investigator, author, librarian, just an all-around very smart human being. We have Sylvia Schultz on the line. Sylvia, welcome to Bob After Dark. May I call you Sylvia?
Absolutely, you can. And yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Finally.
Yes. So we got you on Bob After Dark finally. I feel like this has been a long time coming.
It has been, yeah.
Yes. So we're going to get to the specifics here very shortly. But questions, tell us in essence who you are and what you do.
Okay. Well, I am a paranormal investigator, and I've been writing for a very long time. I started off writing fiction, writing horror and romance. I know, fine line between the two. But I never really got anywhere with my fiction, so I decided to start writing nonfiction instead, and I fell into the world of true ghost stories, which is something I've always, always loved. I've always been fascinated by the paranormal and the weird and the mysterious. So when I lucked into being able to write ghost stories, this was a dream come true, and I've just never looked back.
That's great. And how many books have you written up to this point?
I am currently working on number 11.
That's a lot.
Impressive.
When was the last time you wrote a book?
When's the last time I read a book, Bob? I'm kidding.
When was the last time you read a book?
I read from time to time. Wrote a book? I could say never wrote a book.
I have started one.
Both reading it, right? I remember that book has been going on for a while now, Bob.
Right. Me and Jack are racing to finish who's going to finish the book first. Sylvia, so you...
She could write your book.
She could. Yeah, I'm going to hire her to be... You ever ghostwrite before, Sylvia?
Projects in the pipeline. Enough to keep me busy.
You got a whole bookshelf behind you, which is amazing. So your journey started off in fiction. So you said ghost stories fascinated you for a long time. Where does that begin? Like what triggered your interest in the paranormal? We're going to take you way back.
Oh my goodness. Well, my father was a big reader. I grew up in a family of readers, and my dad would read anything and everything and he could get his hands on. And he was the one who introduced me to true ghost stories. We have him to blame for all of this. We would sit around, I'm the oldest of five, so we'd sit around the dining room table having supper, and my dad would regale us with true ghost stories. And that is where I got my love of the paranormal. So I grew up in the Chicago area. I grew up in LaGrange.
We know where that's at.
Yeah.
Hey.
So I grew up with my dad telling me stories of Resurrection Mary and the Screaming Mummy at the Field Museum and all of these wonderful Chicago ghost stories. That's what I cut my teeth on. And he instilled a love of ghost stories in me to this day. And I love it. So when I wrote, I was listening in on you guys talking about being locked in a museum overnight. That would be my choice.
See, that's you got the right choice. By the way, I need to point out that we're Count and I are very simple folk here, and I want to congratulate you for teaching us some words.
Yeah,
the regale was a wonderful word, and I feel. Regale. I like that word. I'm going to use that one more often. Usually we're very primitive on the show, like me want bite, me hungry. It's like I got to sit there and polish off the shirt here, folks. I can't act like a Neanderthal. No,
we got to learn some big words. The big time.
Oh, my goodness.
My father's mother had an astounding vocabulary, and she was the one who taught me really, really great words when I was very, very young. I mean, she taught me words like obstreperous and perspicacious.
Excuse me.
I need my dictionary. I'll
never forget this. I was asking her if we could feed the dog some chicken. And she said, do not feed the dog chicken because the bones will perforate her gut.
Oh, perfect.
That's terrifying.
Fine, and I could understand what that meant.
And I'm sure that was a terrifying, revelation too.
It was very disturbing. I loved my grandmother's dog very much, and I wanted to share my chicken with her, and grandma said no, don't do that.
Well, Sylvia, you have a spectacular vernacular.
Did you look that up?
No, I just always remember that they rhyme together.
My mother is a linguist herself. My mom would beat me right now. She will later when she hears me. I taught you better than to be a Neanderthal, you know. Joking aside, so you started your love with fiction. How does one begin to say, you know what, I'm going to be a writer? Because I'm going to tell you, the reason I became a talker is because nothing else worked out for me very correctly, so I started talking for a living. Now you're writing something that's very prolific. What was your first ramps in writing? And you started in fiction and romance, which is cool, and there are certain things you can't talk about. We get that. But, you know, how does one begin their career as a writer in your case? And a lot of my fans are trying to be. So tell us your story. How did you become a writer?
Well, this is really interesting that you should ask this question, because I was talking with my dear friend James just earlier today.
James from Peoria, everybody. We got to always have a good James reference.
Name dropping.
Yes. Sorry, I had to. I'm assuming you're referring to James from Peoria, correct?
Absolutely.
Excellent. We love James. He's a friend of the pod, as they say. But go on.
Yes. So we were talking about the way I got started in writing. And yeah, I started off in fiction and have always loved horror fiction. And I worked on a book that I was very, very proud of. And I actually put it into a contest, an internet-wide contest. And I got to be the one of the last 10 in this contest, and then I got to be one of the last three. So I was very excited about that. And I realized that there were going to be two disappointed people at the end of this whole thing, and unfortunately, I was one of those two disappointed people. But I was able to go to an indie publisher who did horror fiction. They've since gone out of business. But I was able to go to this independent publisher and say, hey, I've got this book that made it to the final three in this internet competition. Would you be interested in publishing it? And he was. So that's how my first couple of romance or horror novels got published. And I lucked into the romance thing too, just about the same way, working with indie publishers. And that's what I do now with my paranormal nonfiction. I have several independent publishers that I work with that I have wonderful relationships with. So, yeah, I'm currently co-authoring a straight true crime book, nothing paranormal about it. And for that, my co-author and I are working on getting an agent and starting that process and journey because we're confident enough in this book that we like to think it's going to hit the big time. So, we want one of the big New York publishers to pick it up instead of just an independent publisher.
That's well, we'll be pulling for you on that.
Yeah.
Look, man, if
Thank
you're gonna
you.
dream, you might as well dream big, right?
Exactly. This is part of my dream, seriously. With this book that I'm working on right now, it is my goal to be published in hardback.
That's a good goal. I didn't even know as a non-writer myself that you couldn't just get printed in hardback, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I've been a librarian for a long time.
I would have
Long.
probably taken a wild guess saying that you grew up in a family of readers. I'm assuming at some point in your life you would have worked in literacy in some
Yes,
capacity.
yeah. My sister does too. My sister is a department head at a library in Las Vegas. But I'm not a department head, I'm just a desk schmo, but I'm fine with that.
You
But yeah,
can,
I've been
we're
working at
all,
my
we can lie
library
here.
for
You're
You're
fine.
fine. You could have just told me that you were like
We're not gonna
the
research
Grand Poobah branch
it.
leader, and I'd have been like, hey, there you go.
We don't
It's fine.
fact check around
We're
here,
going to be
do
talking about
we?
ghosts
No,
anyway, so you could have done whatever you
yeah.
wanted.
Yeah.
But no, I've been working at my library for 27 years and 27 and a half years. And I see a lot of books come through, and part of my job is to put covers on these books. So we have paperbacks, we have mass market paperbacks, which is what you think of when you think of a paperback. And you have trade paperbacks, which is something like this.
Sure.
And then you have hardbacks. And it has been my goal for a lot of years to write a book that is popular enough that it is released in hardback. I mean, that when I do that, not saying if, I'm saying when
When
I do
is
that,
when
I will
manifest,
motivate
manifest.
it.
So let's get into the paranormal. You grew up in your dad's regaling. That is regaling the correct term for that? Yes,
Yes,
regaling. I
it
learned that
is.
is my
You're gonna
word.
be using that every day
I'm gonna
now.
use that all the time. I'm
Yeah.
regaling these my regaling the story that she just told us. So your word, do you know where your dad's love of the paranormal come from when he read the stuff, or was it just kind of like a random thing that worked out, or do you happen to know that story?
Found out. Yes. I'm sorry to say my dad is no longer with us.
Okay.
He passed away in November of 2021. But in October of 2020, before we had a vaccine, my sister Miriam got married up in LaGrange, and my dad came down from Wisconsin for the wedding. And we were standing around. We had it outside, of course, because of COVID and whatnot. But we were at the reception, and I finally got to ask him. I said, you know what? I'm going to ask him this. And I said, you know, you told me all these wonderful stories. How did you find these stories that you passed on to me. And at first he said, well, you know, I read a lot of books and I just picked them up from that. And I said, I accept that completely because that's how I got that's how I get all of my stories that I put into my books and write down for myself. And that's how I get most of my stories. It's just reading voraciously and omnivorously. And then he said something about watching TV shows. And it occurred to me that he would have, in the Chicago area, he would have been watching folks like Dale Kaczmarek when Dale first started getting on TV, and Richard Crowe, and people like that. And I thought, what a magnificent thing this has turned out to be, that my dad watched these people on TV and got interested in the paranormal and shared that love of the paranormal with me by watching people who are now my peers.
Right.
My colleagues. It's come full circle, and that's just wonderful.
Man, those old, by the way, folks, in case you're curious, Richard Crowe, godfather of the paranormal in the Chicagoland area. There wouldn't be a paranormal in Chicago if it wasn't for Richard Crowe. Comp Panic was lucky enough to go on one of his stories.
Yeah, towards the end of his
I have him on the show, but unfortunately Richard Crowe is now probably on the other side of the veil picking on me. So, and then Dale is a WGN radio personality who used to do ghost stories, correct, Amundo? That would have been before my time.
I don't know that he probably worked with WGN. He's written books. He's given tours. He's another pillar of the paranormal community in the Chicago area.
Gotcha.
Dale Kaczmarek, Ursula Bielski, folks like that.
Yeah, no, we all know Ursula. I think Ursula these days is enjoying retirement, but we still, we think about these people, and now you have people like Cop Panic that lead the paranormal community. Is something like that.
Me?
Yeah, you're the new leader in the paranormal community.
I guess if you wear a cape, you could do that, right? I mean,
So Sylvia, when did you put word from books to paranormal investigating? When did you brave yourself to be like, you know what? There's probably something more to this than these TV personalities in these books. When do you make that transition?
Well, I was actually lucky enough to fall into that with my very first book. I was doing the research for Ghosts of the Illinois River, and I happened to, one of the places I was researching was the Peoria Players Theater in Peoria, obviously. And I went to the theater, had a bit of an experience there with their resident ghost, Norman, and just absolutely fell in love with the place.
I'm going to pump the brakes for 1 second. How can you tell me you had an experience and then skip over it? Do you know what show you're on? Go back and tell me what the experience was.
Sure.
Okay.
Come on, please. Okay. Tell us.
All right. So we'll take a little bit of a detour.
Yeah, here. No. Detours are great. And that's the whole point of the show. But you got to tell us the experience. You can't just be like, I had the experience. You know, that's got my interest peaked.
Okay. All right. I will tell you this experience. So yes. Norman N. Dean was a director at the theater back in the early 1960s, and he died very, very young of cancer. He was only in his 30s. So he was greatly missed, and he loved the theater so much that he has never left. So the Peoria Players Theater is very deeply proud of their resident ghost. They have an awards program every year that includes the Normie Awards, so in a nod to Norman and Dean. So I heard about this, and I called the theater and said, hey, you know, I hear you have a ghost, and some businesses don't like to talk about that, but they're like, oh, come on over and meet him. That was great. So I went over there on a break from work. At that point in time, I was working a split shift, so I had the afternoon free, but I had to get back to work for the evening. So I go to the theater, and standing on the stage and looking around, I was not even a baby ghost hunter at that point. I had no idea what I was doing. I just knew that I was interested in it. So I was standing on the stage waiting for something to happen. And I knew I had to make communication somehow. So I started talking to Norman and I said, you know, hey, Norman, I'm writing a book on Peoria Ghost and Illinois River Ghosts. And I would love to tell my readers that you're here. So would you make a noise for me or, I don't know, move something? And I listened. I didn't hear anything. I noticed that next to the stage door, there was down child. My dog is obnoxious here.
No, that's fine. We love fur babies on the show. So
I
that's...
love you just as much as I did 30 seconds ago. So next to the stage door, there was a small child's desk. And on the desk part of the desk, there was a small stack of little plastic shot glasses. And I saw that and I said, you know, this is something light that a spirit would be able to move. So I picked up the top shot glass off of the stack and I put it on a 2x4, like a long 6-foot pine 2x4 that was sitting on the stage. And I said, there you go, Norman. If you're here, move the shot glass for me, please. And I looked at it. Nothing happened. Okay. So pretty soon after this, there was a volunteer at the theater, Pam, that came and started talking to me. And she was talking with me about her experiences. She was one of the women that, or one of the volunteers that painted the sets. So at one point she was painting the set and kept hearing noises and went to the front of the theater and said, do you guys have a ghost here? And they're like, yeah, we do. Oh, okay, just wondering. So she went back and started painting again and kept hearing the noises. And she said aloud, well, Norman, if you're curious about what I'm doing, just come over and look. And she tells me that very shortly after that, she heard footsteps coming towards her on the tarp on which the set piece was lying. So that was cool. So we're going around backstage and she's telling me stories and all sorts of fun stuff. And we make our way through the backstage area back to the proper place of the stage. And I notice that my little shot glass is still there and doesn't seem to have moved. So I said, well, Norman, you know what? I've had a wonderful time at the theater talking with Pam and hearing stories about you. I have to leave. I have to go to work. So if you're going to move something or make a noise for me, now's your chance because I have to leave in about 5 minutes. And Pam said, did you hear that? I said, no, I didn't. What happened? And she said, up on the catwalk, there was a little noise on the catwalk. I said, Norman, thank you so much. That was great, but I didn't hear the noise that you made. Would you make another noise for us, please? And then Pam whipped up and pointed at the catwalk. And that time I heard it. There was someone moving around on the catwalk.
Aww.
So I said, Norman, thank you so much. That was great. I really appreciate you making a noise for me. That was wonderful. Thank you so much. And because I was raised to be polite and to put things back where I found them, I picked up the little shot glass from the 2x4 and I went to put it back on the stack of shot glasses that was on the desk. And the stack of shot glasses was gone.
Wow.
Oh, I guess it moved a whole... Norman decided to move a whole bunch.
I said, Bam, did you... There was... Okay, there was a stack of shot glasses here. And she got this big grin starting on her face. I said, you didn't move that stack of shot glasses, did you? And she started laughing her ass off. And she said, no, wasn't me. And I knew it wasn't her because she'd been with me the whole time. And I said, I told her about asking Norman to move the shot glasses. And sure enough, she said, he's a trickster. He likes to hide things and he likes to move things where they're not expected. And I said, all right, Norman, you got me.
Thank you for sharing that with us. We really appreciate you couldn't just skip over that. I'm sorry, Sylvia. But anyway, so you got your experience with Norman, and then you start proceeding with your book about these river ghosts other than just Norman.
Yeah, yeah. So I was lucky enough to be able to tag along with a Peoria group called Guard Paranormal Ghost Unit Analysis, Research, and Detection.
Leave it to the librarian to remember every abbreviation there. That's really impressive.
Yeah, thank you. So they kind of introduced me to the whole concept and best practices of investigation, and they allowed me to tag along on some of their ghost hunts and whatnot. So I started learning. So while I was working on researching these stories, I was able to go out to some of these places, like the Havana Theater, which unfortunately no longer stands, and the Peoria State Hospital, which I have ended up visiting countless times and have written 3 books about, and Zion Cemetery outside of Forest City. I visited that for the very first time while doing research for the Ghosts of the Illinois River, and I've been back since then. And it's always a pleasure to visit that particular cemetery.
That's amazing. So, was your experience... Go on.
I'm sorry.
No.
I really enjoy going out to these places. I'm very pleased to have lucked into this hobby slash research avenue slash fun thing to do.
It's a lifestyle. The paranormal is literally a lifestyle because there's so many aspects to it. And I think people underestimate exactly what we do in our area of expertise, you know?
Oh, yeah. The history of it is what really fascinates me. I really believe that you can't understand the ghost stories of a place without knowing the history, because that's why we have the stories, is because of people's experiences. So I'm really glad that I have this lifestyle of paranormal investigation, because then I can go to these places like Malvern Manor or Gettysburg or the Villisca Axe Murder House or going ghost hunting in England and Scotland. And I can tell my readers, this is the story. And hey, you know what? This is what I experienced there. So I can tell you these stories are true because some of them happened to me. And that personal touch is what I really value in the stories that I am lucky enough to tell.
That's a good way of putting it, Count. Yeah, I don't know about you.
So, yeah, very good way of putting it.
So your experience with Norman, I got to go back to that just for a quick moment, because it's such a good, that's a good wholesome experience for somebody's first, you know, your first outing. I enjoyed knowing that. Was that your first real entanglement with the paranormal, or did something happen before that?
That was my first verifiable brush with the paranormal. I have been to England 3 times.
Okay.
The first and second time I went, I was in college both times, and I was interested in the paranormal and the mysterious, but I was by no means a ghost hunter at that point in time. I was just interested in it. So one of the places I went was Warwick Castle, and I am just dying to go back there. So there's the castle is next to the town of Warwick, and there's a church in Warwick called St. Mary's, and it has a crypt underneath the church. So I went down to the crypt because, you know, spooky dead bodies is always a fascination of mine. I'm one of those weird people who loves to stroll through cemeteries and read the stones and just...
Oh, yeah, you're so weird, let me tell you.
I know. Yeah, such an outlier in this.
Yeah, community. Oh, my God, let me tell you. Ludicrous, I say.
So I was in this crypt visiting and looking around, and I turned towards, there were doors set into one of the walls, and there were little grates in the doors, and you could look through, and it was almost like a mausoleum in an above ground cemetery, but they were like little burial places in the crypt of this church. So I was peering in through this grilled window, and just like a mausoleum, there were 3 shelves on each side of this door that I was looking at. And all of a sudden, from the middle shelf of the left side, I just started getting this feeling. I'm not sensitive by any means, and I still don't consider myself very sensitive. But I all of a sudden got this feeling of, you do not belong here. You are alive. We are dead. You are not welcome here. You need to leave now. So I left now. Like, okay, I guess I'm done. yeah. So that was completely subjective.
Sure, sure. But you're the one with Norman, though. You had a witness. You're there. That's more of a tangible physical thing that you can look at.
Yes, and I had another wonderful experience with Norman that I can share with you.
You know, I'm here for it. Sylvia, you're the star of the show. You need to share whatever you got for me. We have time to kill here, my dear.
Excellent. All right. If we've got the time.
You have all the time in the world. Compound got nowhere. The bees and vampires.
I'm up all night anyway.
That's keep going. You're a great guest, and I appreciate hearing these stories.
If you have the time, I have the tales.
That's such a librarian thing to say.
Yeah.
That I feel like that should be on a bookmark somewhere. Like a book, you know, a bookmark.
That just popped out of my head.
That just popped in there. But anyway, so you got to visit Norman again.
Yes, Norman. So I happened to be invited along on an investigation at the theater with a different paranormal group, not Guard. It was a different group. It was Ann Pritchard's group, and I just remember the name of it offhand. But so there was, in the theater, there is the stage, of course, and then underneath the stage is an orchestra pit. So if you kneel down on the floor next to the stairs that lead up to the stage, there's a little opening underneath, and you can actually crawl under and get into this orchestra pit. So we were down there doing some EVP work, just recording, and it was so peaceful. It was quiet, not a whole lot of lights on, and we're like four of us in this orchestra pit, quietly asking questions. The only light was the little red glow of our voice recorder. And it was so quiet and so peaceful that I felt like I could have curled up and gone to sleep. It was a marvelous experience. So we got done with that, and everybody kind of met back up in the lobby of the theater. Had some snacks, because you got to keep your blood sugar up.
Oh, of course.
So after the snack break, Anne said, all right, so we're going to go up into the theater again, and we're going to go up the stairs into the top corner of the backstage area. And I immediately started getting very, very nervous about this. One of the stories that Pam had told me earlier was of a nastier entity that is in the theater. It likes to trick people. It likes to hurt people. It likes to make a lot of noise. It followed her home and was throwing rocks at her in the garden. It appeared in her bedroom as a man without any clothes on. It's a very intimidating entity. And we were going to go and visit this entity, basically where it liked to hang out. And I said, we're going to go lights out for this, aren't we? And she said, yeah, of course we are. I'm like, oh, okay. All right, fine. All right. I will suck it up. I will do this. I'm learning how to do this. I'm going to be brave. I'm going to do this. So it was Anne and my friend Gail and Gail's daughter Allie and myself. So get to the stairs, go up this narrow rickety set of stairs to this platform. Only enough room on this platform above the stage, only enough room for four chairs. So the four of us sit down, and I immediately start wanting to crawl out of my skin. I was just tense and vibrating with nerves, and I was so, so, so scared. Really, really uncomfortable and unpleasant feeling. So I reached into my pocket. I had a little piece of rose quartz with me, and I grasped that as hard as I could. And I just thought calm thoughts to myself. And after a while, I realized that I was not so nervous. And I said aloud, I said, gosh, you know, I'm really starting to feel a lot better. And Gail said, mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of strange. But I kind of brushed past it. And we kept recording and kept asking questions. And I realized as I was sitting, we were sitting about 12 or 15 feet off of this level of the stage. And I realized that out of my peripheral vision to my right, I could see the front of the stage. And just about in my peripheral vision, just about at the level of where I was, I could barely see this thing floating above the stage. It looked like a gnarled, tangled blob of rusty barbed wire. And I couldn't see it if I looked at it directly, but I could see it out of the corner of my eye. And I said something about it. Like, that is really, really weird. This is what I'm experiencing. This is what I got. And everyone thought that was interesting. And this is an experience you're having. This is great. But it stayed over there. It stayed on the stage, basically. So I didn't think too much of it. We got done with our recording, went down the stairs, said our goodbyes, and we were driving home. And I had driven Gail and Allie to the theater, so we were all driving home, of course. So as we're driving, Gail said, do you want to know why I said what I said in the theater? And I said, oh, gosh, yeah, I do. What was that all about? And she said, when you said you were starting to feel better, that's when Norman came from wherever it was he was in the theater, and he came to where we were, and he put kind of a protective bubble around the four of us.
Aw. Yeah. Norman to the rescue, everybody.
And he kept that nasty entity away from us. He was protecting us. And I said, wow, that was really nice of him. That was awfully kind. That's a really great thing to do. And Gail looked at me and said, Sylvia, don't you get it? Norman likes you. That's great. That's awesome.
That's gotcha. That's great. I mean, you know, nothing like wooing over a ghost, Sylvia. Yeah. That's a trait in of itself.
There was a movie about that, I think.
Yeah, somebody making pottery.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that you bring up the subject,
yes.
There is a spirit in the basement of the Pollock Hospital at the Peoria State Hospital.
Now, real quick, the hospital, we've chatted on the side, and I'm taking a wild guess that the hospital is your favorite paranormal spot. Is that correct?
It's real high up on the list.
Excellent. We have a caller.
Malvern Manor in Gettysburg, and yeah, it's real high up there on the list.
We have a caller real quick, Sylvia, so we're going to take the caller live. You're going to be able to hear the caller as well. And then we will, we're going to get back to the hospital here in just a moment. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
John, you're late. I was beginning to wonder if you forgot about me.
No, I never forget about you. And I didn't know how long Sylvia was going to be on the air, but since you guys mentioned you got all night, you know, I figure, well, you know, I want to get my call in. First of all, I wish you guys a happy new year. And
you too, John. Thank you.
Sylvia, as an avid listener of Bob After Dark, appreciate you coming on the air and sharing all them wonderful stories. They're very intriguing and really caught my ear, and especially your fling over there with Norman. So that was Norman in the shot glasses. That was pretty interesting. But where are you from now? Where are you zooming in from?
I'm coming from Peoria, Illinois. So,
oh, okay. Well, so you're in. I know you mentioned it quite a bit. So you're You're in the Chicagoland area then.
Okay. I grew up in the Chicago area.
Oh, okay. Very interesting stories, and want to wish you continued success on your book writing career as well. And
thank you.
Again, thanks for being on the air, and I'm going to continue to listen to you guys. And one more thing about the museum, Bob. I don't know if you guys ever recalled or maybe even seen that movie Night Out at the Museum. But
yeah.
And so.
Yeah, it's a documentary, right? That's based on a true story.
Well, I don't
get T-Rex to come. No,
I mean, well, it was a movie back in the 70s or 80s, I believe, where Ben Stiller was a night custodian, and everything came up after he locked the place up. Everything came to life.
That's how it goes. Yeah,
it's good. Robin Williams is in it, and it's very touching. He has a line in there that always gets.
Yeah,
me.
So you know what? So I'm gonna have to. But the third or fourth one that agrees, I don't think I want to be stuck in a museum after hours. So
okay,
made them all.
But once again, you guys have a happy New Year, and Sylvia, thanks for being on.
Thank you so much.
Okay, have a good night.
Thanks, John. You too.
Bye.
John's our avid caller. He calls every week, and we always appreciate him. Even if we have zero people calling in, we'll always have one.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Sylvia, as I was saying before, John called in, because I usually like to ask my guests if there's a favorite spot of theirs to investigate. And you have a list, so I'm not going to make you a pick, but the hospital I know is near and dear to your heart. That's kind of like your local, your stomping grounds where you're at now.
It is. Oh, yes. You say haunted mental asylum, and your mind goes all American Horror Story on you.
Right.
And you assume that there was pain and fear and abuse. And it is my privilege and my joy to tell people that was not the case at the Peoria State Hospital. This was a place where the patients were treated like family members. So, yeah, I am so privileged to be able to share the history of the Peoria State Hospital as well as the hauntings.
Now, James took me to the cemetery where the TV patients were. That's not the same thing, correct? Or is it?
Well, yes. Tuberculosis was a definite scourge on the hilltop for pretty much all of our history. People were dying of tuberculosis on that ground for many, many years. The asylum started in 1902, and people were immediately suffering from tuberculosis. There, take another quick little detour.
You're fine.
Where the Pollock Hospital stands now on the hilltop, before that, there was kind of a batwing-shaped building. And when you guys come down for the Forest City investigation.
Yes.
I'm your native guide to the Peoria State Hospital right. Hilltop too. So you'll hear this again. But before the Pollock Hospital was built, there was a batwing shaped hospital on that land. And even before that, there was a tent colony for the care of tuberculosis patients. That's why Cemetery 2 is right there, because they wanted to have as little distance to cover as possible to get people buried who were going to be buried there. A lot of the people that passed away on the hilltop got sent back to their family. 75% of them did. So only about a quarter of the people that passed away on the hilltop are buried there. Most of the people got sent back to their families. But so this is to say that there is a spirit in the basement of the Pollock Hospital. A young man named Christopher, or Chris, he prefers to be known as Chris. He passed away from tuberculosis. The Peoria State Hospital was also a proper hospital, not only an asylum. So they gave medical care to people too, people who couldn't afford it. People from the area that needed medical care could come to the asylum to get medical care as well. So this kid, he says he's about 24 years old when he died. And he says that the last year he remembers is 1906. And he and I, through the use of a psychic medium, have had many conversations. And he is a bit sweet on me. My friend Liz calls Chris my fake dead boyfriend.
Oh man, what is it? Not Careless Whisper. Help me out here. Count. What's the Pottery song?
Melody, right?
Yeah, Unchained Melody. Unchained Melody. Sorry, Sylvia, had to pick on you a little bit.
We can't play it, I guess.
Can't play it live, but no. I mean, we can, but it just can't make an appearance on the podcast. Oh. So we'll just play it after the credits.
So one of the times that I was downstairs talking with Chris, I've been told that one of the psychic mediums I talked to said he loves you, not in a romantic way, but because you remind him of his sister. So I'm like, well, that's cool. So I actually have a friend who is a very powerful medium who came down with me to the basement several times so that Chris and I could have a proper conversation. And at the Peoria State Hospital, they had movies every Friday night and dances every Saturday night. And the dances had been going on for many, many years because Chris told us that he could hear the dance music coming from the cottages, but he couldn't go and join the party because he was in quarantine because he had tuberculosis. And he said, I miss dancing. He said, I miss it so much. And I could hear the music and I couldn't join in because I was dying of tuberculosis. So the next time I went down there, I brought my phone with me, of course, and I had recorded a ragtime song on my phone. And I played it for him and he was absolutely delighted with it. And after the song was done, he told Diane, he told the medium, no one's ever done that for me before.
Aww.
Yeah. So that was really neat. And it was during that visit that I said, you know, Chris, if I'm not supposed to know this, that's okay. You don't have to answer it, but what's heaven like? And he said, one of the sweetest things that anyone has ever said to me, he said, when you get here, I'll be waiting for you.
Oh,
look that's for the tall, gangly kid with the dark hair.
I'm like, that's a powerful message.
Yeah, that was so sweet.
Usually I get threatened by the afterlife. I get threatened and insulted. Nothing ever comes through. Even when dad comes through.
No sweet talking ghost.
Dad don't sweet talk me when he comes through. It's usually something very mean.
Well.
That's
what I'm looking forward to seeing, Chris. Now I have someone on this side that absolutely adores me. So
that's the fake dead boyfriend though. That's a new Bob After Dark t-shirt design right there. Colin, I think you're the fake dead boyfriend of a lot of people out
I
there.
I guess
right?
So, yeah. By default, yeah.
My friend Liz has a wonderful sense of humor and she was just absolutely charmed by the fact that Chris is sweet on me. So yeah. She came up with the phrase fake dead boyfriend.
So we got a caller.
We do, Bob.
Caller, you're on the air.
Go ahead.
No, I lied. Caller, you're on the air now.
Oh, hey there. Happy New Year, Count and Bob.
Is this James from Peoria, the stick switch himself gracing my phone line?
It is, actually.
Oh, my
his
goodness.
His ears must be ringing.
His wings are flapping. His ears are ringing. And the grumpiness melts away as he steps forward into the mirror.
Oh, yeah. You know, my ears are burning, so I was like, I better make a phone call.
So you call into Bob After Dark, you silly boy. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys?
Oh, we're having a lovely conversation with this great author here. Do you have any questions for Sylvia this evening?
Yeah, actually, I have a question that this is one that you and Sylvia could answer, honestly. For lack of a better term, what would you consider your white whale? What is the one ghost you would love to capture on film or interact with or something of that nature where you can say, you know, I got the definitive proof of that ghost, its existence?
Richard Crowe.
Dr. Zeller, or Rhoda. Rhoda Derry.
Yeah.
I would be thrilled to bits to meet Dr. Zeller. Or Rhoda. Either one of them would be wonderful.
Richard Crowe for me, James, just because he's the one who kind of started. Actually, I lied. Art Bell. The ghost of Art Bell for the original Coast to Coast host, who is no longer with us. That's the ghost I want to be able to speak with, is Art Bell himself.
Maybe Abe Lincoln.
That's such a generic answer.
The ghost of Abe Lincoln?
We were just having that talk on the pre-show about the Hall of Presidents.
Yeah.
There you are talking about that.
The ghost Hall of Presidents.
I do believe there have been sightings of Lincoln's ghost in the White House, so yeah, panic, get on it.
And his whole train. We did an episode all about ghost cars. A tie-in, speaking of... And the guy on the phone was actually co-hosting the episode with us.
Oh, yeah, that's true. What was his name again?
He's the stick switch. I don't know. He's just grumpy. Makes moon water out of Dasani. That's a throwback.
I heard he sent in a fan letter on a corn husk.
He did send in a fan letter on corn husk. I'm not even joking with you. Gosh, I don't remember what episode that is, but it's Haunted Cars. You guys can check that one out. It's in the backlog. But, James, you can't go anywhere without answering the question yourself. Who do you want to capture?
Yeah.
So, I would love to be around an artifact or something like that. Mine would honestly be Captain E.J. Smith of the Titanic.
Oh, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
That's a great answer.
I mean, if communication with him was possible, the big mystery is, where was he? What happened in his last moments? And I'd love to be the person to get his spirit to tell us.
They found his bell that was attached to his cabin. It is on display. Oof. I saw it as a kid. I want to say it was at some kind of Titanic thing in Tennessee, but his bell from his cabin's there. So if you get a strong enough medium there, who knows? Maybe there's some residual attachment to that. I don't know. But that's a good answer, James.
Oh, thank you. Did you know that the bathtubs on the Titanic are still full?
I was actually, get out of my head, I was going to crack that joke with you and be like, but I was going to say the swimming pools on the Titanic are still full to this day.
Now that's what I call craftsmanship.
Badoots. James, thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, James.
Are you still there?
Yeah, he should still be there.
James?
Yeah, kind of cutting in and out a little bit.
Oh, no, we were saying thank you for calling in, and we'll see you for our investigation next week.
Yeah, totally looking forward to it. I got beds ready for you guys.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you then, James. Thanks for calling in, buddy.
Bye, James.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye. So let's, are you good over there, Count Panic?
Yeah, I'm just making sure.
Okay,
we're cutting, so I'm just making sure we're cutting.
That's just because he's in the sticks.
Oh, okay.
He has to have the hamster on the wheel spinning to give him his power there. Now, Sylvia, we're running out of time, sort of. But so before we get to that, I know there's another big love of yours. And an analogy we do on the show is that there's a group of us in a really weird bowling league, just bowling on different teams. And that's the paranormal people and the conspiracy people. But that also fits in with the true crime. Now, true crime is a big passion of yours as you're working on a new book. And so can you quickly tell us just a little bit about your... we have another caller on the line.
Hold that thought.
Hold that thought, Sylvia. You're a popular one. Caller, you're on the air. Caller?
Good evening.
No, I'm done.
Oh, what a night. Sylvia, Dracula. He always gets a kick out of Dracula when he calls. Dracula, you know, he doesn't call often, but he calls from time to time. Bob just loses it every time here.
Happy New Year, Count Dracula.
Happy New Year to you, Bob. And to you, Count Panic.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Kyle, what did you do for New Year's, buddy? Did you do anything fun?
Yeah, a little round of the round. My castle is waiting for the big moment when 2025 will be here. And, oh, boy. Oh, I've heard that a lot of monsters were busy this time of year. For some reason. But I celebrated with my three brides.
That's a lot of brides.
It was. Yeah, I know. I know.
Do you have a pun for us this evening, Count Dracula? Because
you would like to hear a story.
It's the only thing I ever wanted in my life.
Once again, not only do I have a story, I also have another top 10 list.
Oh, I'm all about it.
All right. Here it is, my story.
Yes.
A little boy walked up to his mother, and he said, "Mom, I'm bored. I don't know what to do today." His mother replied, "Why don't you go in the backyard and play with Grandpa?" He replied, "But Mom, I played with him yesterday and reburied him."
So,
kind of dark humor there, wasn't it?
Do you have your top 10 for us, please?
Yes, of course. Now, here it is, the top 10 more ways to tell you may be possessed.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Number 10, you'll become fluent in dead languages.
What?
Hey, yeah.
Number 9, you keep waking up in strange places, including on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Number 8, you've developed a taste for pickles dipped in peanut butter.
Common.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Number 7, you would pour milk in your bowl before the cereal.
That's a monster.
You keep using all forms of the word regale. That's one for you guys. Right? Yeah. Number 5, you have arguments with inanimate objects.
I'm in trouble.
Number 4, you only eat the brown M&Ms.
Okay.
Number 3, your shadow keeps trying to escape from you.
That would be bad.
Number 2, your TP unrolls from the inside. And the number 1 way to tell you may be possessed, you hate the Ghostbusters franchise.
Oh.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Thank you, Count Dracula, for calling in.
You're very, very welcome.
Have a good night.
You as well, and Happy New Year.
There we go. Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening. How about that, Bob? How about that?
Sylvia, you just encountered a Count Dracula. I don't know who it is. This guy calls in.
Well, it's Dracula.
It's Count Dracula. I mean, he just...
Jeez.
Oh, goodness. You just lost all form of professionalism for me, guys. I'm done. Now, Sylvia, as you were telling us, so you got this new book coming out. It's all about true crime, which falls into the realm of what we do. Yeah, so, you bowl on both bowling teams then, on the true crime and on the paranormal side. So why true crime? Where did that come from?
Because it's fascinating.
That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, the things that people do to each other just never fail to astound me. So the way this happened was that several years ago, so the guy that the publishing outfit that does my Asylum books is Crossroad Press, and my publisher there had done Fractured Spirits, and I think he was just about to put out Fractured Souls as well. But he approached me about doing a true crime book. And like I said, I've been working in the library field for many, many years. And at the time he asked me, which is about, geez, like 10 years ago now, it was the fashion and had been for a very long time for an author to write a book on one case, and if it was a cold case, to put forth their own theory as to what happened. I did not feel that I had the chops to do that just yet. I wasn't very knowledgeable about the field of true crime. That's about all I knew about it was, you know, authors concentrate on one case for the entire book. So I told him no. But then, as I was working on a book called Days of the Dead, A Year of True Ghost Stories, I realized that an awful lot of these stories I was coming across had their roots in true crime, usually murder. And I got to thinking, another thing that happened was that the format of true crime kind of shifted a little bit. It became popular for an author to collect a bunch of stories around one central theme. So I went to my publisher and I said, what would you think about me doing a book on true crime, but a collection of true crime stories that have resulted in hauntings? And he loved the idea. So that is how I got the idea for Grave Deeds and Dead Plots. And I kept collecting stories, and I have enough for the next 5 books in this series. The next one is going to be all gangsters. It's going to be bunches of fun. But yeah, I just released Grave Deeds and Dead Plots Volume 2. So yeah, that's what it is tales of true crime that after everything is said and done, there's a ghost hanging around because of the situation. So it's been really interesting writing about that and doing research for that.
I love it. 10 out of 10, Sylvia. Now, big question, because it is time for the shameless plugs. Are all of your books currently in print and for people to buy, and where can they buy them?
Okay, so if you visit sylviaschultz.com, that's S-H-U-L-T-S, if you go there, you can find all sorts of wonderful things. You can find a list of all the books that I have, a couple of which have won awards, so I'm so you'll also find links to my podcast called Lights Out. There's another podcast that I have that is called Grave Deeds and Dead Plots. I'm very, very happy with it. That it is basically me reading stories from the collections.
Oh, nice.
So bunches of fun.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for that podcast, Grave Deeds and Dead Plots, and check out Lights Out if you're interested in that. And it can all be found on sylviaschultz.com.
And guys, I'll have a link in the episode description on the bottom. You guys can go on there and check all of that out as well.
Right. So my books, including my fiction books, are available on Amazon, but Amazon doesn't need any more of our money. I give Amazon enough of my money. But when people ask about buying my books, I like to send them to a website called bookshop.org. The interesting thing about Bookshop is it's just like Amazon. You can order any book you like from this company. And when you do, when you make a purchase from bookshop.org, part of your purchase price goes into a fund that gets divvied up between independent bookstores at the end of the month.
That's
so
great.
It's a way to celebrate indie bookstores and to patronize indie bookstores, even if you don't have one in your neighborhood.
That's amazing. So that's you guys can check that out in the show notes, by the way, too. So you guys can go on there and find all of our stuff, and that way there you can support Sylvia as much as I want to support her. I own a calendar and a book myself, which I'm very proud of owning, and I need to go. I need to go track down the river ghost stories, the Illinois River ghost story book myself. That's my next
very
one.
First book. If you would like to read my very first book, you certainly may. I've gotten better since then. I like
it. You're fine. All of them are. I'm sure all of them are just fine. I'm enjoying what I have. So don't.
Good. Don't. Do you have Gone on Vacation, or is that one that you're lacking?
That is one I'm lacking.
Okay. I think I set you up with Grave Deeds and Dead Plots.
You did. Yes, I have that one. Yes. So I have
a book club here.
The Bob After Dark book club. Oh, geez. Find time for me to read. I struggle like these days. I was just reading Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities. I gave it to my mom and I'm like, here, read this and give me a book report on it, please.
Bob's book club.
I don't have time, so I just give the books to my mom or Vix or whatever. I'll be like, read this, tell me about it. Give me the book report. I'll give you guys a book it pin. And then Sylvia, and then one question I ask all of my guests, well, there's a question and then there's a thing I'm going to make you do. So, okay. But the question I ask all of my guests, especially in the paranormal world, is what does the paranormal mean to you?
Ooh, that's a good question. To me, the paranormal means excitement and communication and history and learning and meeting new people. Mostly it's the chance to communicate with those who have gone before and to put, it's mostly the chance to put a human face on history.
That's a good answer. Good answer, Sylvia. I appreciate you giving me that one. And for me putting you on the spot, you did really well. And the one thing I always make my guests end with whenever we end the shows are, do you have a quip, a piece of advice, an idiom, anything you have that you can relay to the audience? It could be as simple as don't play what matches, but I make all of my guests give something.
Never pet a burning dog.
Me, I'll do it anyway. I'd be like, no, puppers. That's just me, though. I love dogs, so I would definitely be that. You're giving me the wrong advice. But Sylvia, go on.
Do you want to meet Belle?
I do, yes.
Yeah, sure.
Bring Belle up on camera, please. Folks, it is the first dog we've had on Bob After Dark. Hello, Belle.
Look at that.
You are such a good... Turn your face towards the camera, Belle.
Yes, I know you're giving me kisses.
That's a good dog.
And our viewership just jumped 500%.
Biggest ratings we ever had.
Sylvia, thank you so much for coming on the show. You were one of the best guests I've ever had, and I don't just say that. I mean that. You are absolutely wonderful, and thank you for taking time out to share with us, and good luck on the new book. We're excited to get the hardback covers, Count Panic, correct?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I'm very, very excited about it.
All right. Now, folks, for me and Count Panic, Count, do you have any closing words for the audience this evening?
Oh, yes, Bob. Everybody, let me get back to... the thing here. Everybody, have a great, what was I going to say?
2025?
Okay. Wait, time out here.
Truly, you're the finest of producers.
You said the podcast, for the podcast, we'll sit right here.
Good night, and to my mom, I just want to wish you sweet dreams as well, and to Dad, wherever you are in the universe, hope you're happy, comfortable, doing whatever it is that you want to be doing, and a happy birthday to you, Dad, in the afterlife. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.